Do you ever get angry? Do you ever say and do things when you're angry that you later wish you hadn't said or done? Alexander the Great was one of the most talented military strategists the world has ever known, but he was well known for his fits of anger. Cleitus the Black was a Macedonian officer in Alexander's army, and he was the co-commander of the aristocratic Companion Cavalry. He was also an old childhood friend, and his sister Lanike was Alexander's former nurse. And if that wasn't personal enough, Cleitus had saved Alexander's life at the Battle of Granicus in 334 BC, and then he was killed by Alexander in a drunken quarrel 6 years later. The murder took place at a banquet in Mariconda in 328 BC. Some of Alexander the Great's Macedonian officers were unhappy with their leader when he began to adopt enemy customs like proskynesis or bowing down to the king as they conquered the Persian Empire. The tensions came to a head when Cleitus openly criticized Alexander in front of the other officers. Alexander didn't take it well, and he jumped up from the table and ran Cleitus through with a spear. A person may be strong in many ways, but anger has reduced the strongest of men to the behavior of a child throwing a temper tantrum. Anger is a cruel master. Though anger serves to make the point, this is not a lesson on anger. This is a lesson about sin, any sin. Yes, anger is a cruel master. All sin is a cruel master. Another person who was great and mighty was Samson. The story of Samson begins in Judges chapter 13, verses 1 through 7. We're told, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Then the woman, we're told, went to her husband and told him what happened. Consider the anticipation of a child for this woman who was barren and childless. Consider the anticipation of a child who had been promised by an angel. Consider the possibilities of a child who would be dedicated to God, a child who would eventually take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. The Bible says nothing of the early life of Samson, or the influence of his parents, but we read in chapter 13, verses 8 through 12, that Manoah prayed to the Lord, "Pardon your servant, Lord, I beg you, to let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born." God heard Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman while she was out in the field, but her husband Manoah was not with her. The woman hurried to tell her husband, "He's here, the man who appeared to me the other day." Manoah got up and followed his wife. When he came to the man, he said, "Are you the man who talked to my wife?" "I am," he said. So Manoah asked him, "When your words are fulfilled, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work?" As far as we know, Samson's parents were godly parents. There's no mention of sinful habits or behaviors. In these encounters with the angels, his parents demonstrated persistent concern for doing what was right for their child. As we continue through the account, the power and might of Samson appear almost instantly in the narrative. He killed a lion with his bare hands, we're told in chapter 14, verses 5 and 6. The text says, "Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands. He caught 300 foxes on another occasion and tied torches to their tails and released them, destroying Philistine grain and vineyards in chapter 15, verses 1 through 5. The text says, later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I'm going to my wife's room, but her father would not let him go in. Her father said, I was sure you hated her, that I was so sure that you hated her that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Wow, that's a fascinating exchange. But as we continue, it says, Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing grain together with the vineyards and olive groves. Naturally, the Philistines were upset about this, and through a series of events, they convinced men from the tribe of Judah to hand Samson over to them. And we pick up the text at chapter 15, verse 11, where it tells about him killing 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey. It says, 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Edom and said to Samson, don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us? He answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. They said to him, we've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. Samson said, swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves. They answered, agreed. We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you. So they bound him with 2 new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. The last recorded feat of strength Samson performed while he was a free man is in chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. We're told one day Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, Samson is here. So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, at dawn we'll kill him. But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the 2 posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Such a strong, mighty, powerful person. Surely nothing could bring him down. If Samson lived today, he would be known as a superhero. But just as Superman has his kryptonite, Samson had his weakness. Samson had eye trouble. He had an eye for women, and that's what seems to have spawned most of his troubles. This was made obvious by the text we've read, but I'll reread the pertinent passages. Chapter 14, verses 1 and 2 said, Samson went down to Timnah and saw a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as wife. Chapter 16, verse 1. One day Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. Chapter 16, verse 4. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. A lot of men struggle with this. Often the reasoning, the justification is, well, it's harmless. I didn't do anything. But such behavior has a tremendous impact on one's mind and one's heart. Samson had a false idea of playing with sin. Perhaps his great physical strength caused him to think he was strong enough to handle anything, physically and morally. He was wrong, because sin brings recklessness. Everyone who's old enough to choose right and wrong knows about the evolution of sin, how it evolves, how it grows. Sin progressively leads you down a more reckless path. After continuing in some sin, a person will do things they never dreamed they would do. Classic example of this is the account of David with Bathsheba found in 1 Samuel chapter 11. The account began with David watching as Bathsheba bathed. That led to lust. The lust led to adultery. The adultery led to deceit. And finally, all of that led to murder. This is the nature of sin. It grows until it consumes the host. Through the entire story of Samson, it is one long narrative of reckless behavior. But Samson's recklessness is especially brought to light in the infamous story of Samson and Delilah, found in chapter 16 of the book of Judges. The secret of Samson's strength was something he needed to guard with his very life. Beginning in verse 4, we read, "Sometime later he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, 'See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels, about 28 pounds of silver.' So Delilah said to Samson, 'Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued.' Samson answered her, 'If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man.' Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried. She tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to him, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, 'You've made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied.' He said, 'If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man.' And she repeated this process. She tied him with new ropes, told him the Philistines were upon him, but he broke the ropes with ease. She accused him again of making a fool of her and lying to her. Then the next time he said, 'If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric of a loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man.' She tested it again. Then he said in verse 15, she said to him, 'I'm sorry, how can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength.' With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. So he told her everything. 'No razor has ever been used on my head,' he said, 'because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man.' When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, 'Come back once more. He has told me everything.' So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' He awoke from his sleep and thought, 'I'll go out as before and shake myself free.' But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison." First, Samson suggested bowstrings. This was the string of an archer's bow, traditionally made of 3 strands of hemp. Then he suggested new ropes, verse 11. Next, he got closer to the source when he said, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head," in verse 13. Finally, he told her, "Shave my head," verse 17. Reading verse 20 again, the text says, "She called, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' He awoke from his sleep and thought, 'I'll go out as before and shake myself free.' But he did not know that the Lord had left him." Verse 19 had said that his strength had left him. Sin brings powerlessness. Sin weakens. Sin strips away one's moral courage. And so the mighty Samson was rendered powerless. Again, we're told in verse 21 that the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison. Sin brings blindness. Samson's eyes were put out. This metaphorically represents the blindness of sin. Samson was blessed with superhero strength, but he was unable to see where his sinful behavior would inevitably lead. He was blinded to the obvious consequences of his actions. Think about it. How blind, how foolish would you have to be not to see what was coming next, especially after the second or third time? After the bowstrings, after the ropes, after braiding his hair, each time men are waiting and each time they attacked, how many times before you would realize what was happening? But sin makes you blind. Sin makes you foolish. Sin robs you of brain cells. You see what you want to see. Sin robs you of your common sense. How could he not see that he was being used? Because he was having his ego stroked, and she accused him of making a fool out of her. Again, verse 21 tells us the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison. Sin brings slavery. One of the great lies that Satan perpetuates is about sin and freedom. Sin generates an attitude that says, I'm in control. I call my own shots. But sin really brings you into bondage. Samson was the strongest man on earth, yet he was reduced to a pathetic, helpless slave by sin. He was blind, he was bald, he was beaten, he was bound. In John chapter 8, verse 34, Jesus said, "Everyone who sins is a slave of sin." Psalm 19, verse 13 says, "Keep your servant from willful sins. May they not rule over me." Psalm 119, verse 133, "Direct my footsteps according to your word. Let no sin rule over me." The Hebrew word translated rule means to have dominion over, to govern, to reign, to have power over. Proverbs 5:22 says, "The evil deeds of the wicked ensnare them. The cords of their sins hold them fast." Ensnare means to catch, to take captive. Word translated cords means rope or noose or snare. And Psalm 9 verse 16 says, "The Lord is known by his acts of justice. The wicked are ensnared by the works of their hands." Punishment for sin is not always immediate, and the consequences are not always obvious. But one's conscience becomes calloused, and their heart hardens because of sin. And sin doesn't come with a warning label. The warning labels are found in the book we've just been reading. Here's a warning label. We might preface it by saying, because Samson chose to follow his desires and to live a life of self-indulgence, the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding grain in the prison. I'm confident that Samson didn't envision this while he was frolicking with Delilah. Sin brings momentary pleasure. Sin makes you feel powerful momentarily. Then it brings ruin. The end of Samson's life could have been so different. A sinful life is a wasted life. Sin promises satisfaction, but it produces sorrow. Sin promises reward, but it produces regret. Sin promises happiness, but it produces heartache. In John chapter 8, verses 31 through 36, Jesus said to the people who believed in him, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." "But we are descendants of Abraham," they said. "We have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean you will be set free?" Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave of sin. A slave is not a permanent member of the family, but a son is part of the family forever. So if the Son sets you free, you are truly free."